Now, this is a special edition of Movie Moan here at TMT, folks. It's special because we have a special guest, our friend Chris. Say hello, Chris.
Hi, everybody.
It's also special because it's Phil G's birthday in one day from now. So tomorrow will be Phil's birthday. So I don't know if it's tradition elsewhere, but here in the South, we basically make someone drop their pants and we slap their ass however many times, however old they are. So, Phil, how old are you?
I'm fucking 27, you asshole.
That's 27 ass whippings for Mr. Phil G. I kid, of course. Happy birthday, buddy.
Thanks very much. That's a great. Actually, interesting thing I found out. Do you know what actually comes out on the DVD tomorrow on my birthday? I Love You, Philip Morris.
Nice.
So instead of you buying me gifts, I'm going to buy 5 copies of this film and then send them out to each of you. I hope they don't get seized by customs, and then you can finally see the film. So I hope you appreciate that.
That's so sweet.
Wow. Before I introduce the other crew, yes, Christina deserves a proper introduction, Jamie, because this is... Christina's been someone that I've been wanting to have on the show for quite a while now for a very special reason, folks. Let me take you back to November 2007 when a small 25 or 24-year-old, I can't even remember, small, scared, shitless kid decided he was going to start his own podcast about movies. What daring! What arrogance! And he started the show completely by himself. Jamie wasn't even with me until episode 3. And there was absolutely nobody there listening in. It was a live show on internet radio, except for one person. One person was there, and it was there just to support me as a friend, and I've never forgotten it, and that was Christina. So it seems only fair that Christina should join us tonight, and I hope you have a great time, Chris.
I hope so, too. Thank you for having me.
I love that. She hopes so. She's not having it yet, but
she's
hopefully.
She's expecting something horrible things to go down. Things will be said.
We have to perform.
Friendship's broken.
We have to perform.
We do. On our best behavior tonight. Sitting metaphorically across from me is the star of the Ed Hocken Show on BrainDeadRadio.com, Captain Ed Hocken.
Yes, and once again, happy birthday, Phil. I got to warn you, if you buy us copies of I Love You, Phil Morris, not all of us have region-free players.
No, that's true, damn it.
It's not going to work. So I'm sorry to say.
No matter how much screaming we tell our players, it won't listen to us.
Right.
Unless you get us the Blu-ray.
Well, even then it might not work.
Not all of us have HD TVs either, so, because we're cheap. But anyway, joining me to my left is the man from the Great White North himself, Lou.
Hello, everyone. I'm sitting... in a pretty good haze of legally felt haze. I've been listening to Hans Zimmer's Inception soundtrack, and it's one of those few times when your sensibilities and the general public seem to be in sync, as Inception has, again, ruled the box office for the third weekend in a row.
Yeah, and it you know, to be honest, I would be shocked if it, no, with all due respect, I'd be shocked if it wins next weekend, because the Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg, Adam McKay action comedy The Other Guys comes out next weekend, and if it wins next weekend, boy, that's going to be something. You never know. I mean, but, you know, we'll see what happens on that.
Incidentally, I did want to mention that briefly. I don't know if you've heard, Toy Story 3 finally came out here last week. I don't know if you guys have heard just how well it's done in this country alone. If a film is successful in the UK, I mean mega successful, like, say, Lord of the Rings or something, in its overall gross it expects to make about, say, $60 million. That's huge in this country. In its opening weekend, Toy Story 3 made £21 million over here. And it's the highest opening weekend ever for an animated film. It hasn't beaten the opening weekend for Mamma Mia, but I'm sure it'll get over that. But that's just huge. I mean, I told Jamie that people were ready for this, and it turns out that we were ready to wait the extra month and a week.
How's Inception doing?
Piracy. It's doing great.
Okay.
Doing absolutely fine. It was a smash hit. It's done fantastic. But, Toy Story 3 was opening next week. Of course, it was going to drop a little bit. But I saw it the second week, and I think a lot of people did too. So it's going to do, I think we're talking 500 mil worldwide for that one.
You talk about the hugeness, though. I remember Casino Royale was the number one grosser in 2006, and it made $100 million.
Did you say Christina Royale?
I did.
You got that on the...
That's right. I did say Casino Royale. Now, Casino Royale opened, I remember, and that made $100 million in the UK, and that was just unheard of. Like, not many movies made $100 million, I think. It's like Titanic. What else? Mamma Mia, obviously. Casino Royale, maybe one or two others.
Not any of the Potter movies?
Yeah, the Potter movies probably have, and like I say, Lord of the Rings. We've had quite a few big movies over here. Probably Mummy 3 as well. I know we actually helped that movie make money, so we're probably to blame for that one, actually. But yeah, a fair few movies, but still, it shouldn't diminish the achievement. This is absolutely friggin' huge in this country, and explains why I had to beat an old woman for a stick for my IMAX seat last week. But, so, you know, it's all in the past. Damage done.
There you go, dude. Now, so you now there's a movie that you have been holding out for forever. The three films this year, and you got to see the first two, obviously. Now it's the last. It's you got to see it this weekend. And what is that movie, Phil?
Oh, The A-Team. So, I mean, it's not. It's like you say, I wasn't just waiting for this movie this year. This movie I've been waiting for my entire life. Like another movie that's coming out next year. We're going to get onto that in a minute. It wasn't just that I knew the A-Team movie was one that I was waiting for all my life. I just knew this particular movie was going to get made by hook or by crook eventually, because it's been stuck in development hell for a while. Eventually, somebody was going to make the A-Team, and I just prayed that it would be good. And I saw it Friday night, and the theme tune's been on a continuous loop in my head ever since. I'm completely with agreement on Jamie on this. This movie was fun. It was an absolute blast. You can't really... I feel hard comparing it to two other movies, really, because the A-Team was never going to be deep. It was never going to have a theme running through it. No one expected it to. Either it was going to be a cool action movie, or it was going to be some kind of horrible parody that had too many references to the show and just got killed under the weight of that. But it wasn't. It was a really cool action movie. They got rid of the van really quickly, which was a shock to me, but a refreshing shock. And I just say it was a really, really, really cool action movie. And I will give any action movie props that manages to get a reaction out of an audience. In the UK, maybe in America, you guys are more easy to please. I mean, I
saw we are.
Clapped at Prince of Persia, for God's sake.
Sadly.
So you are more easy to please. But in this country, it does take a lot to impress us. So when I see the A-Team on Friday night with a bunch of amped up guys, and some old ladies as well, by the way, just thought you should know that. It's true. I guess they love the Rampage Jackson. So
I think they thought the A stood for AARP team.
Well, we can interpret this over. Please leave feedback in the comments section. Why were old ladies at the A-Team? We'd love to know your thoughts. But we all enjoyed the movie very, very much. The 3D gag especially is the one that I remember. If you haven't seen the movie yet, I am not going to spoil it for you. Maybe you're waiting for it till it comes out. It's a rental for you. But the 3D gag is really, really cool, really, really cheeky, and that got a great reaction out of us. But, Jamie, they did not play the theme tune at the start of the end credits. They played something else. They gave us the intro, and then they didn't play the actual theme. And that's just bullshit. That's bullshit, dude.
Did you give the movie an F grade just for that? Like, fuck this movie. No, they didn't play the theme.
But it is. It's just like, I mean, Ed had the most wonderful description when we were first talking about the trailer and the fact that the trailer didn't have the theme. And he said, come on, when are we going to get to the fireworks factory? And that is so true. It's like, come on, you're giving me the start of it. Bum, bum, bum. They're doing the intro with the narrator, and then we don't get the theme. And I was like, and by the way, I didn't actually stay for the end credits, so I didn't see any cameo scene. I wasn't really, really bothered. But I mean, apart from that... Who cares? It was a kick-ass action movie, and I just had a blast watching it. I think my opinion of it is going to diminish when I view it on my own, you know, which is sad. It's a little Blu-ray, but watching it with a crowd, it was really, really great. One slight niggle about it, which I did think hurt the movie: did we really need this weighty subplot about Mr. T not wanting to kill anybody anymore? I've given up that fool. I ain't going back there.
I love that at the end of every line is fool. You know, it's like watching, you know, Changeling and hearing my son at the end of every line. It's that way with, you know, Rampage Jackson is playing Mr. T. Because if you don't know he's Mr. T because he already has the hairdo, you know, and he's afraid of flying, he says fool at the end of every line. So just to remind you, in case you're retarded.
Absolutely. And but that subplot, it just felt out of place, especially since in the same scene we're laughing because he's got a new haircut, which is like an afro. It just doesn't match, and I don't know why the hell they did that. I don't know why they thought, well, we really need to test Rampage Jackson's acting chops in this scene. He's asking for weighty material, so let's give him something. It's like, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. But yeah, apart from that, it was fantastic. Loved it. And I was really, really glad, really, really glad. As a segue, another movie I've been waiting my entire life to see. Oh, no, shit, sorry, I forgot. Lou, asshole. Sorry. Lou saw Inception again, and he wants to talk about it. I'm so sorry, Lou. Go ahead.
That's okay, not a problem. I just want to quickly add to what I talked about last week with Inception. I've seen it twice now, and I'm firmly convinced that Nolan has purposely constructed this movie so that arguments for this being a dream or versus reality, both sides are perfectly valid. So I think he did that on purpose, and I think it's just amazing that it comes off as well as it does. I did rewatch these scenes that we talked about that weren't too clear about the jump scene. They're definitely two separate buildings, and I find it very interesting that his Cobb's totem, Leonardo DiCaprio's totem, is really his wife's totem, which he got out of the safe when they were in limbo. So that to me is a really big hook that everything revolves around in the movie. So I just love the movie even more the second time, and I'm as I mentioned off the top, I'm still listening to the soundtrack nonstop. I just think it's a totally awesome soundtrack.
Do you know what I love, Lou? I love right. that your Skype profile has a picture of Batman, and Batman's telling me how cool Inception is. That's wicked.
Oh, the square-jawed Batman, no less.
For the home audience, yes, my Skype avatar is a Batman comic sketch. There you go.
It used to be a picture of what did it used to be a picture of, Lou? Because that was even cooler, used to have.
Star Trek red shirt.
That's right, yeah. That's good. I think the implied subtext was that Lou was on borrowed time on this show and we were going to kill him at any point, but that wasn't true. And once he realized that, he changed it to Batman, which I guess means he thinks he's the coolest one.
I think you're wrong though. But like, you know, Lou was wearing the Star Trek thing, and like, Star Trek is cool now. It's never been this cool before. So actually, Lou was ahead of his time.
That's true. That's very, very true.
I was so behind the time that I'm now back ahead of time.
There you go, dude.
So anyway, as I was saying before, I really forgot about what Lou wanted to talk about, is that another movie I've been waiting my entire life to see.
Among others.
Among others, but this one especially, is The Mighty Thor, and Thor is finally coming out next year. What we assumed was that, as always is the case, somebody at Comic-Con at the panel would have got out their little camcorder or their mobile phone and shot the footage and would have posted it on YouTube. But nay, verily, I say, the heavens have delivered a clean copy of the footage, and it appears to be from a special effects house or something. And I have things to say about
they're
it.
Pissed. They're pissed about that getting out, obviously.
Obviously, but
if I remember correctly, now someone have to correct me on this, but it was supposed to be on the Iron Man 2 DVD as saying, look, here's your exclusive first look at the Thor footage.
Oh,
that
really?
Was the intention. Maybe this is wrong. I remember hearing that somewhere. But Marvel's pretty fucking pissed about this.
Well, as a hint, Marvel, release the Captain America footage on the Iron Man 2 DVD instead, because that's what I really wanted to see, but I don't think we are going to.
That 1 second teaser?
No, the footage, the unfinished scene they showed of Hugo Weaving, that's what I wanted to see.
That scene, that's right. The Cosmic Cube. Yeah.
But anyway, first of all, we're going to defer to somebody who is not a Thor fan, but I'm going to hear her out anyway. Oh, I might as well. So, Christina, what did you think of the Thor footage?
I thought the Thor footage was absolutely terrible. I thought it was dull. I thought it was boring. I thought there's no story really here that I can see. It's just that he gets cast out and, oh, okay, now he's on Earth, and why should I care about what's happening here? Nothing really grabbed me. Like, I remember when I first saw the Iron Man footage, the very first footage from Iron Man 1 from Comic-Con, and I immediately knew, I want to go see that movie. That movie looks bad. I see the Thor footage, and it's not doing anything for me at all. And another concern that I have is Devin from Chud wrote up a really nice article about the footage that he saw, the same footage that we saw was played at Comic-Con, but it was played in 3D. And apparently the 3D looks absolutely terrible. Like, there's something wrong with the perspectives or something that's going on here, and I'm very concerned that this movie is going to suck.
I think that the red flag, though, and Chris, is you talk about Iron Man, and you're completely right. You remember with Iron Man, though, they actually let that footage stay on YouTube in order to build the buzz. It's still there. You go right now, you can find the Iron Man Comic-Con panel footage. Now, it's still there. They wanted to build the momentum. They said, we got a winner. We're going to let everyone see this. Let them see it. The more the merrier. But when studios start waving red flags, even if it's illegal, which understandable, but you just compare it to Iron Man, you go, they didn't care then. They let it sit there. And Thor, which is just as big a risk as Iron Man was, and they are. I mean, the footage is gone now for the most part. I mean, most of these ports that had it, they were, you know, got cease and desist letters from Marvel/Paramount. That's pretty telling, I think. Like, uh-oh, this movie might suck. They're afraid. And hey, in 5 minutes, a 5 minute sizzle reel, how many lines did Chris Hemsworth speak? Like 6, 7? It's pretty bad.
Absolutely, absolutely right. I don't know. I've had a really bad feeling about this movie ever since it was announced. I just don't see how a character like Thor is going to fit in with the Avengers, with everyone else on screen. I know it was in a comic book, but on screen, how is a thunder god from another planet or dimension or wherever the hell he's from going to fit in with people who are, for the most part, well, they're fantastical, but they're still human beings. I don't see how it's going to work.
What do you guys think?
What about you, Ed? Let me
say something. I think part of the issue is that a lot of these movies have been, you know, kind of based in reality. Now, Thor, I never followed Thor. This is more of a space opera-like movie. The tone is, for people that are used to the more realistic superhero movies, if that there is such a thing, this is going to be jarring. And I think that's probably why you're having this disconnect right here. And also, as you know, it's been said, he's a god of thunder. Well, it's still pretty damn powerful compared to, you know, the Hulk. So, as I said, I think that's where the disconnect is coming from. And as I said, we're used to more having these reality, more based superhero films compared to something as fantastical and you know, and all sort, you know, anything can happen sort of thing, type comic book movie. I mean, especially if they're going to go with the idea of, you know, people are talking about the Infinity Gauntlet, which is a whole other issue, too.
Right. It's I don't know. It kind of looks cheap. You know, like all of a sudden we see like these big sets and stuff, and all of a sudden we're in Arizona. It's like, who cut the budget? He's not wearing the suit. He can't pull the hammer. He's just gonna walk in like, I'm a god. And what? Lou, what do you think?
Well, like Christina said off the top, for me, basically, it's unchanged my opinion about the movie. I've always been kind of iffy on Thor because I think it is a hard comic book property to translate to the cinema. The problem I have with the 5 minute promo is maybe it was intended as a sizzle reel, but it really played more like a plot summary, and without the context of building up that world that Thor and his father and everybody else lives in. You know, the conflict that they're setting up there, you can't really buy into it because you have no emotional buy-in at this time. So that, I think what they did there, maybe that's, you know, maybe they were constrained with exactly what they could release to the crowd to show them at that time. But for a sizzle reel, it was not the material that I would have chosen for that movie. So it's my opinion's unchanged. Like you said, the Iron Man one was much better. But this one, it's got a lot more backstory because it's in another world and that. And so you have to build all that stuff up, and that stuff takes time, and it's not something that you can put into a sizzle reel. So I think they put the wrong things in the sizzle reel. They may have been constrained by what they were able to show. But we'll just have to see how it plays out. I mean, it could be really bad, but, you know, with Kenneth Branagh, like, you know, this guy is a actor with, you know, heavy-duty Shakespeare background. I really find it hard that he's going to fumble with the story, but we'll have to see.
That's why I was intrigued, though, was getting him. You know,
exactly,
just,
yeah.
That's
like, he's a saving grace for me. Like, that guy knows story. If he can't pull it off, I mean, technically he might have trouble with action scenes or special effects, but from the story perspective, I would think that he would have a handle on that.
And you know us, I mean, I was the one championing Hemsworth. I thought he was great in the opening 10 minutes of Star Trek, but as other people have said, guess what? It's 10 minutes, and, you know, it's a lot of that's music and, you know, looks and stuff. I mean, he didn't really say much in Star Trek either, but I thought he was great. I still maintain that, but maybe he just shouldn't be a leading man just because he looks like one. He's towering.
I think, Jamie, it's just the nature of the character. I mean, Iron Man, you had Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, and that's something you can grab onto very easily.
Yeah.
Thor, you have the god of, you know, mythology. It's tough to nail down stuff from, you know, Greek mythology, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's a bigger disconnect, and, you know, otherwise what Kenneth Branagh did do Frankenstein with Robert De Niro, so it may just end up being just too starchy. Who knows? For this type of material.
Well, thank God he didn't put himself in the movie, you know, because Branagh, I mean, that's always the criticism he's got in the past is, what was it? Everyone says that about Hamlet, like, it's great, but why did he make himself Hamlet? You know, that's what everyone always says. I mean, I disagree with that, but, you know, thank God he didn't make himself Thor.
Well, Mel Gibson played Hamlet, so what can you do?
Not going there.
Yeah, touche. Later. You know. No, but a little segue there. Actually, it's not.
Hey, wait a minute. What about me? You're afraid of my opinion, Williams. That's what it is.
I assume we got your opinion. I loved it. That's great. The end.
No,
all right.
No, this is the thing. No, honestly,
go ahead.
It's true. You're absolutely right. And I don't hate the footage, but something about it felt off. And I have to say what it is this. We were talking last week about how the presence of Marvel at Comic-Con versus the presence of DC at Comic-Con, and how they didn't really show much of Green Lantern, and they told us nothing about any Superman or Batman movies that were coming out. And we said, do they have to? No.
Nope,
all they have to do is focus on making the films. And I think we're really starting to see the difference between DC films and Marvel movies, and that is that DC, even though we don't have that many movies to base this argument on at the moment, but I think I'm going to be right about this, is that DC really are focusing on making the films as individual things that stand up by themselves in their own individual universes, even though eventually they're going to try and make it all, you know, tied together. I really don't see that at the moment. Like Batman, like even in the own Batman series, Batman Begins is separate from The Dark Knight. The universe it takes place in is completely different from the Gotham City we see in The Dark Knight. We've talked about that before. They're focusing on making the films individual. With Thor, I'm just getting this horrible feeling. Like, the person who gets the most screen time in that footage is Agent Coulson. Not Thor, not Loki, not
Probably
Odin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Agent Coulson, which makes me feel like it is going to be a repeat of Iron Man 2.
I did roll my eyes at that line at the end where he goes like, is that one of Stark's? No, he never tells me. Like, oh, God, don't. That's just like, you know, was it fanboy jerk-off
service?
The music
is so over the top, isn't it? When it's revealing him, it's like, come on. What are we getting so excited about? So that is what's making me uneasy. Because
you cannot judge the reception of Thor footage at Comic-Con to anybody else, to the real world. You can't. It's jaded. These people were going to be excited about it. It was mostly like, OMG, I got to see it first. That's what
exactly.
It is. So when people say like, oh, it went over well, you're going, and?
No, here's what I will say on the positive side. When we see, and we've talked about this before, I think the Thor costume is pretty much as good as you can make it without it being ridiculous. It's not ridiculous. It's great. He looks great in it. There's one shot we see of him wearing the helmet. That looks great to me. I think it looks great. The scenes we see of him actually fighting with his hammer, they look good to me. It looks good. I'm a little concerned, and it's based on one special effect shot, but to me, Asgard looks like Vulcan from J.J. Abrams' Star Trek. Again, it's just one shot, but that's what it looks like to me. I don't see no rainbow bridge. I don't see the clouds. I'm not getting excited. I didn't like Clash of the Titans, but, you know, Mount Olympus looked wicked. It really, really looked wicked. I mean, that's what they're competing against in terms of Layers of the Gods, and it doesn't look very impressive right now. I'm just really, really
uneasy. You cannot compete against shiny Liam Neeson, though, to be fair.
Oh, man, this movie's going to suck. I hate this. I hate facing reality. No. We can't face anything.
You're in a dream.
I'm starting, though, just on the basis of this footage, my opinion is starting to change. I said, and you got me on record saying this, I thought Thor would be a great movie.
So did I.
Captain America would be a hoot, but it wouldn't be as good. I might be starting to change my opinion now. I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm really, really starting to get concerned. The Thor I grew up with was a classic, you know, timeless tale about a guy who gets sent to Earth, but he falls in love with the mortal woman and risks everything, all his power and his godhood, and defies his father for that. And this is not what I'm getting at.
Wait. This is Superman 2.
Well,
that's exactly.
I didn't ask you. Shut up, Ed. No, he's right. He's right. I'm starting to. Well, and look, we're at the point where the comic book movie doesn't have anything original to say. Unfortunately, I think pretty much we've seen every type of archetype of story. Everyone's ripped off Superman 2 once they get to the second movie. Pretty much, you're gonna watch it. Ghost Rider 2. He'll give up his powers just so he can, you know, go to bed with her again. You'll watch. You wait.
With who?
X-Men 2. Ripped off Wrath of Khan, so...
Yeah, that's... There you go, exactly. So, but I mean, I thought the fact that it might rip off Superman 2 is the least of my concern. That might mean it might actually be good.
Well, someone already ripped off Superman 2, Spider-Man 2, so come on, let's be honest here.
That's true. And what you were saying, Jamie, is what I'm worried about the most is that there might be the fact that there might be budgetary constraints on this thing, and I don't want to see Chris Hemsworth looking like MacGyver for 90 minutes of a two-hour movie.
He kind of does.
That's what it looks like to me. And someone's going to make that trailer on YouTube of, you know, the Thor trailer to the MacGyver music, and I can't wait to see it. But it's not helping me very much in my anticipation of this film. We better move on to something which we are excited about, but I'm going to get Lou, our resident diehard Guillermo del Toro fan, take Woo-hoo. It. Go ahead.
Well, we discussed last week after... Del Toro had left New Zealand and Middle Earth to come back to the mainland, that he was going to do a Disney movie of all things, which totally threw me for a loop. But fortunately, he quickly came back this week and told us that he's going to be doing his longtime pet project, an adaptation of H.P. Lovecraft's Mountains of Madness. So, and no less with James Cameron's backing. So, this guy's really moved in with the big boys. Like, you know, he leaves Peter Jackson and goes into the embrace of James Cameron.
Let me chime in for a second. I got to say, because I was reading a little bit of this on Chud, this has got to be an extremely ambitious project.
This is like the horror fans' version of Lord of the Rings adaptation. He's got a lot of pressure on him to deliver.
He's been doing all these other movies in order to make this movie. So it's with great irony that, you know, Hobbit falls apart. Well, I mean, it hasn't fallen apart yet. Wink, wink. But he's off that, and he's, you know, and all of a sudden he gets this, the movie he wanted to make the whole time, which is so weird. Well, good for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a tough adaptation because I don't know if any of you've read much or any H.P. Lovecraft, but his writing is totally idea focused, and the characters in his stories are really just like plot devices, very very two dimensional, very flat. So Peter Jackson's got his hands full to make these characters come to life, and I'm really hoping that that this could be like end up being like a bookend movie to John Carpenter's The Thing, because it bears a lot of the same types of themes and obviously setting as it takes place in the Antarctic. So I'm really excited about seeing what he's going to do with this,
and in 3D no less. Like, he's going to shoot it in 3D.
That I could.
At least he's shooting it in 3D.
Take or leave it.
Yeah, I could take it or leave the 3D.
Again, at least he's shooting it in the goddamn technology. Like, that's there. You know, I shit talk Avatar a lot, rightfully so. But you know, there's some good has come out of this. You know, Cameron is shepherding other people's projects that I think Del Toro probably would have had a harder time without Cameron's backing, which is awesome. You know, so props to Cameron also.
Okay, first of all, you're not allowed to slag up Avatar on my birthday. Secondly,
that's true.
Christina, Where do you stand on that, Del Toro? Because Lou's of the opinion, actually, that he should go back to his foreign language films, and he's much more comfortable in that, which he won't be doing for this one. But, Christina, where do you stand on this?
I would go so far as to say that Guillermo del Toro is my favorite director working today. I love him. I've seen pretty much all of his movies. Anything that he wants to do is fine by me. I cannot wait to see this. And I hope it gets it done fast so you can bring me Hellboy 3. That is all I have to say.
Yes! Back up! Told you! They don't like Hellboy 2. They don't think Hellboy 3 will get made. But I'm glad you're on my side with that, Christine.
That ending of Hellboy 2 was god-awful. Because then it's like, okay, so he knocked up
Liz.
And it's like, okay, are they going to be like human kids or like half demon? It was like, that was, terrible.
That's not the point. The
that's when
you
bring in. That's when
you
bring in Max von Sydow in the third one. You know.
Well, at least, I mean, the only thing we got to learn at that ending was that he was all man down there, even though he had boobs.
Never question the manhood of Ron Perlman, sir.
Oh God,
I can't count the manhood of Ron Perlman.
I know. I was joking. Anyway, moving on to less uncomfortable topics.
I wouldn't go that far, actually. This is a very uncomfortable subject for me.
This pissed off a lot of people, strangely. So they're remaking Total Recall, and they've just hired a director. It's Len Wiseman, the guy who directed the first two Underworld movies and Die Hard 4, which I like Die Hard 4, actually. Not so much the Underworld movies. And not surprisingly, this will probably end up being a more action-oriented version of, you know, yes, we can remember that from Wholesale. I believe that's the title of the short story. Terrible idea. Well, I mean,
absolutely outrageous.
I am just not a Terminator movie.
So
that's that's true. I just for me, it's like, you know, the original will always be there, and it's such a great concept that you could update it, do a new version of it. I'm just not been out of shape about it because I'm always going to have Total Recall to enjoy, and that movie holds up.
I know. I mean, that people say that every time there's a remake produced, but it's just like, ultimately, the question is why. I mean, is there a lot of money to be made here? I mean, unless they're trying to somehow Inception has created a new bandwagon, it's like they say people are going to want to see dream movies again.
Yeah,
I doubt.
Exactly.
Why? I mean, there's absolutely no reason to remake this movie. The movie is fine as it is. Yes, Arnold is not a very good actor. Yeah, it's kind of dated, but that's just the way it is. And it's great. Like I said, it's Arnold's best non-Terminator movie. And Paul Verhoeven was perfect as it was. No one should remake anything Verhoeven ever did. Just don't do it.
Amen.
Except for Basic Instinct. That's a terrible movie. I'm sorry.
Why would you remake Showgirls is anyone's guess. You might at that point just light the money on fire. Because then you at least kept a homeless man warm.
So,
Christina, are you a Paul Verhoeven fan?
Not really, but I don't see any need to remake this movie, especially if Len Wiseman's directing it. No, thank you.
Enough said,
Lou.
I don't think a remake is necessary, but I think the story. I haven't read this in a long time, but I don't think the Schwarzenegger movie version follows the story that closely. So, I mean, it's open to other interpretations, much like the I Am Legend has been remade so many times that, I don't know. If it was a Top Flight creative team behind it, I could get behind it. But
it's the people who made fucking Green Hornet.
Yeah.
Enough said.
I haven't seen it yet.
You haven't seen it yet. Yeah. I mean, let's be fair. Let's give it a chance.
Yeah, that movie's going to surprise people.
But like if James Cameron or Del Toro or somebody said, I want to remake this movie, then, obviously I'd be interested. But with the pedigree that it's attached to it right now, I definitely cannot get excited about a remake of Total Recall.
Yeah, I'm just still trying to figure out what are they going to improve on. I mean, there's not the way they handled the whole thing, if it's not a dream or if it is a dream, was great. All I did was just intercut stuff. So you'll never know.
Look, if you're going to remake it, my thing would be like get the sort of like someone like David Cronenberg, which of course is ironic that he was supposed to do it in the mid '80s. Get someone like that, more of a heady filmmaker. No, not Nolan. He kind of already, I think we already know he did a Total Recall like movie already with Inception. But get someone like that, man. I mean, just make it a straightforward action movie. You go, well, that's kind of who cares, because Verhoeven had his cake and eat it too. He had the balance of both of, you know, is this reality or is this, has he been lobotomized? You really don't know. I mean, Verhoeven has said he thinks he's been lobotomized, but he doesn't tell people that's definitely what it is.
Well,
so,
I had always heard when it came to whether or not it was a dream, it was like certain scenes were it's a dream, certain scenes it's not, but then it's mixed together so it never comes out the right way.
Right, which is yeah. great. That's, you know, a movie like this, you don't need to be told, like, up front, it's real. It's fake. Decide for mm-hmm. yourself, goddammit. You know.
Is he a replicant or isn't he? Who knows?
Yeah. When will that topple stop spinning? Okay, mm-hmm. moving on. Actually, this one.
Hey, you've done it again!
What?
Listen to me! Come on. I need to vent. I just need 2 minutes of your time. So.
I assumed you already spoke about it. I apologize.
No, I told you how this works tonight.
We've been married.
No, I won't.
How long have we been married now?
3 miserable years.
No, it's ahead, hitting clean up tonight, it is.
Yes. No. I mean, everything you guys have said is true. For the record, I was thinking long and hard when Ed mentioned what is Schwarzenegger's best non-Terminator movie. And a debate rages on that, really. I mean, some people do think it's True Lies. I love Conan the Barbarian, but I have to say, yeah. On balance, I think Total Recall is the best one.
Because he acts the most in Total Recall.
Yes,
so.
I think you'd be right. Yeah, and it is a smart movie. And you can debate. And I just love the way that it's set up. That Arnold Schwarzenegger is a lowly construction worker with muscles the size of Belgium and Sharon Stone for a wife. And the most amazing apartment anyone's ever seen. Does everyone have apartments like that? Does Bob Costanza have the same apartments? I'd love to know what women he sleeps with.
Well, I was about to say, he has Harvey Bullock as his co-worker.
Yeah. Recall. The point is... The reason, one of the reasons, one of many, that Total Recall is so great is the fact that Paul Verhoeven just has a visual style that no one else has. The man is demented, but in a wonderful way. And the creatures that he creates, once the movie goes to Mars and you see his vision of Mars and the creatures, the mutants and stuff, you just think, no one else could have done this. And no one else would have let anybody else do this. People with uteruses for heads and stuff, the three-titted woman, and Tony, yeah. My favorite, the guy with the thing in his head. I haven't seen the movie for a bit, but these are images that are implanted on your brain. Anyone who sees Total Recall does not forget it. They
no.
do not forget the images in it. So if anybody is going to remake it, and yes, I subscribe to the argument that it doesn't take anything away from the original, but if anyone is going to do it, it's going to have to be someone with their very own distinct, very visual style. And they're getting Len Wiseman! This is folly! This is madness! This is Sparta! This must not happen! This is wrong! So I know it's doomed. And it is
wow.
one of those points where I don't know why they're even bothering. And you know what? Maybe nothing will come of it.
Because the most rewarding part was when they made them the money.
Exactly! There you
well,
go.
What money, exactly? I know Underworld made money, and so did Die Hard 4, but, you know, the man, you know, man is basically, you know, on a Brett Ratner caliber. You know, it's like, okay, he can direct, but it's just
yep.
incredibly generic.
Yep.
And, you know, it's just, it all it is, it's the kind of direction. So, you know,
yep.
it's just incredibly
Well,
average.
I mean, well, how would you react if it had been like M. Night Shyamalan?
I wouldn't have been surprised, actually, if it was M. Night
Yeah,
M.
really.
But then,
I mean,
like, why who the hell, you know, how did he even finagle the money is anyone's guess.
He's yeah. got, as I jokingly say, you know, he has, well, I'm not going to say that out loud, actually. I was about to use an old joke I've said before. Phil knows what I was about to say. Not saying it.
There. Let's move on, shall we?
You know what I was going to say.
I do. You're
you
so, so predictable. We're going to let Ed take the next one. This was his suggestion, a movie
yes.
about robots, right up Ed's alley. What is it,
Well,
Ed?
I'm not a huge robots fan, but actually this is a great setup. It's a movie of a robot, and it's called Boilerplate, based on a graphic novel that was released last year. And the story of Boilerplate is that he's this robot created in 1893 and then just shows up in all these events up through World War and fights in World War I and the Spanish-American War. And there's a cute video of him in various historical moments. And, you know, they photoshopped in a robot. And it was funny that even people thought they actually thought these pictures were real. So with Boilerplate, this robot who is... you know, is almost Forrest Gump-esque in terms of his place in history, J.J. Abrams, of all things, decided to produce this. Now, whether or not this comes off the ground, who knows? But it's a neat idea, and, you know, why not? That's what I say.
Something fresh. Woohoo.
Yeah, heaven
Christina?
Forbid.
Christina?
I was just about to say, it sounds pretty much like Forrest Gump, except he's a robot. So,
well, he's a robot that actually has helped people and fought in wars.
Zillig is the movie we should be referencing. That's what it really sounds like, actually, Woody Allen's comedy, where it's like this guy is in all these historic events, and he put, like, it's all done as a fake documentary, like all these, you know, him inserting a lot of old, you know, old stock footage and photos
well,
and
like
whatnot.
Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, same thing.
Yeah, there you go.
I've got to be honest, before I'd mention it, I hadn't actually heard about this one. I haven't been keeping up with it. But isn't there another movie coming out next year with Hugh Jackman about a robot boxer or something?
Real Steel.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
It actually does. It sounded ridiculous, but then that first picture came out, that first production photo, it actually looked very badass, and I completely ate every word I said about that movie derogatorily. Yes, it's directed by Sean Levy. But I still will say, you know, this could surprise people.
Also, we haven't had a good robot movie since, probably.
Robocop?
Or at least a robot movie since AI.
iRobot.
Oh, AI.
Kidding.
AI. God damn it.
Kidding.
Get off. Yeah, or Iron Giant. There you go.
Yes, Iron Giant. Absolutely.
Well, Iron Giant was 99. AI was 2001.
Transformers. Get out.
You chummed me. Thank you, Leo. You chummed me. You said something stupider than me. Thank you very much.
Get out of this office.
But the more robot movies, the better for me. I love robot movies. I'll see anything
with robots.
There was
a robot in Moon.
Yeah, but
yeah,
it wasn't
spoiler.
Yeah, but the movie wasn't about that robot. Well, it was the computer, you know. And then,
I know.
Now we're just splitting hairs here. But anyway,
Wall-E. Wall-E's a robot movie.
Yeah, well.
I love me some Wally, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah,
there you
also
go.
Steampunk is always kind of neat. I don't know why all of a sudden people started hating it because it's got extra gears and stuff, but, you know, there's an inherent neatness to this kind of thing. It's just something somewhat, you know, new. So as to whether or not this actually happens, who knows? But at least it's encouraged me to actually try and check out this graphic novel.
I mean, if Abrams really wants to have it happen, it'll happen. I mean, he's pretty much the you know, the golden boy at Paramount at the moment. So, I mean, they're making Mission Impossible 4 because it sounds like it's because he wants to make it. And I'm like, really, Mission Impossible 4? I mean, I thought 3 was great, but I'm like, do you need a fourth one, really? So I hope this one happens. Sounds awesome. He is producing so many fucking movies right now that this is the one where I actually say, I want to see this movie. All the other ones, this is like kind of like Cloverfield-type movies or something with a zombie and all this other crap. But this, fuck yeah.
Well, the Super 8 project sounds intriguing, too.
Whatever that is, it's Mr. Mysterious. You know, who knows? Yeah. That's what's so weird about this movie. It's the first J.J. Abrams project that's not being so fucking mysterious. Like, we actually know what it's about.
But you know, he'll try to work his continuity in somehow. So maybe he's fueled by, like, Slush or some nonsense.
Or it's the origins of Bad Robot.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's like, that's some kind of bad robot. And then they all look off to the side.
And they look into the camera and wink.
So our final news item of the week. Let's be completely behind the times and talk about Mel Gibson. Everyone else talked about it, but that was a month ago. But we'll talk about it only because a new story came out this week that Leonardo DiCaprio, completely unbeknownst to me, was supposed to be attached to a Viking epic that was going to be written by William Monahan and directed by Crazy Mel. DiCaprio has pulled out, and I thought that Crazy Mel was leaving the country and wouldn't be able to get a movie made now. But I don't even know why it's being mentioned, but it's interesting.
This whole thing, I mean, even though William Monahan was writing, it sounded kind of like Braveheart, but with Vikings.
Well, I mean, there is kind of an update to this. It's a website called What's Playing reported that apparently, I haven't told you guys beforehand, it sort of dawned on me, I forgot to tell you, but there's rumors going around that Gibson and Joel Silver are restarting talks about doing Lethal Weapon 5, because Gibson
really, Jamie.
He really needs to get people's good favors, but you go, really, would
that's just going to piss them off even further. Oh,
would it be a really good idea to have him and Danny Glover in the same room now? Like, if I was Danny Glover, would I want to be anywhere near Mel Gibson? No. It's just...
Absolutely not. I don't think he's going to do it. I was just saying, I don't think he's going to do it at all. The only way he's going to do this is if they give him the mother of all paychecks. Unless they do that, he's not going to do it.
But then what would we think of Danny Glover?
What would we think of Danny Glover? He's in, like, the first Saw movie. I mean, what does that tell you?
That's probably what he thought to himself on the set of Saw. He said, I'm too old for this shit. Yeah, I'll take the check. Yeah. You know?
Wasn't it said that, like, Lethal Weapon 4, I remember hearing this one, said, the only reason Lethal Weapon 4 ever came about was because Danny Glover needed the money. So,
they only made Lethal Weapon 4, to my knowledge, because... Now, Phil, you're more...
Oh, yes, I know he's going to say it, but he's go ahead.
Because
Superman trivia.
Because Superman Lives was supposed to come out for that summer, and that fell apart, and they basically needed something to fill their July void. And they said, Lethal Weapon 4? Eh?
That was one of Siskel's last films he ever reviewed.
Zing.
God, I'm depressed.
No, but I believe that's what happened, because they started shooting that thing in January, and the movie was out in theaters by July. Like, that was who is available, who can we get, let's get this done now.
All I can say is, would be quite a coup for Mel Gibson to get Danny Glover to star in a movie with him right now.
Or any African-American.
Chris Rock.
Or any African-American, any Jewish American, any... Who else has he offended?
Everybody.
Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, Timothy Dalton.
I want Lethal Weapon 5 with Timothy Dalton as the villain, and then I'll see it, with or without Danny Glover.
He has not made fun of midgets yet. I'm waiting for the day.
I'm Googling it now, because I bet just as we speak it's happening, so let's just have a look.
Probably. But,
Just to clarify something, because Christina typed it in here, that he's not leaving. Mel's not going anywhere, so he's just selling some of his houses.
Get them pitchforks ready.
It's just a rumor that we read. So if any of you know, actually, I don't have time to find it now, but if you do know that Mel Gibson hates midgets, you have evidence of that, please leave a comment. We will mention it next week on the show. So that's it for news this week, folks. I want to imagine you at a huge round table that we're all sitting at, and some hard-hitting current affairs music, because we're going to have a nice friendly debate. Well, we're going to try and have a nice friendly debate, but somehow I don't think it's going to happen. Basically, in a news article that Bill Hunt over at digitalbits.com, which if you love home media and DVDs and Blu-rays, you already know about.
Oh, yeah.
If you just get into them, you need to go there, because it's the best place to go for news and stuff. The guy knows what he's talking about. It's fantastic. But a news article that he posted last month, he was revealing that sales of both catalog releases, that's not recent releases, new movies that have just come out, but, you know, old movies, like they just released Predator on Blu-ray to coincide with Predator, so that's a catalog release, and also TV DVDs and Blu-rays, sales have gone down, and no one seems to know why. And I just thought, I realized over the last years or so that the people I have with me are quite an eclectic bunch. Jamie does not buy movies, really. He rents them. Lou is a big TV nut, so we wonder why TV sales are down. Maybe Lou can tell us. I don't know where Ed stands on this. Me, being a Blu-ray collector now, I have a lot to say about Blu-ray. But we'll just start and open up the question. Firstly, we'll start with Christina. Why do you think sales are down? Do you actually buy that many movies? Do you give a shit? Let's start with you.
I think the sales are down due to a combination of the recession. People are trying to save money. And Blu-rays and DVD box sets cost a lot of money. And people are trying to save money. I know, I've noticed that I've bought less DVDs lately than I would have a couple of years ago, because I'm trying to save money. And if I have to choose between buying $50 worth of Blu-rays or putting gas in my car, I'm putting gas in my car. So I'd say it's probably a combination of people trying to save money and the fact that Blu-rays just cost a lot. And if you really want to watch a movie or watch an entire season of a TV show, you can do it on Hulu. You can do it through a bunch of other less costly ways. There's a bunch of other ways that you could do it, or I hate to say it, I'm sure people are probably pirating stuff because they don't have the money to waste on DVDs anymore like they used to.
Now, what's interesting about that to me is that I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong because I don't live there, but I would think going to the movies with friends and buying all the snacks and stuff, is the price of that goes up and up and up, and cost of going to the movies is as much as, you know, buying a DVD or two, and cinema attendance is as good as it ever was. So it's interesting that you mention that, because I wonder why people are still okay with one, but, you know, sales of actual home video is decreasing.
I don't know. Oh, go ahead.
People like going out to the movies with their friends because it's a nice, it's a big event. No matter how bad the economy is, people are still going to go to the movies.
Correct.
When it comes to buying a movie and owning a movie at home, they want to get that for as cheap as possible. That's why that has gone down while the attendance has stayed the same. At least I think so.
Well, what about you, Lou? What do you think?
Well, you guys have touched on a couple of touchstones with this, but I think off the top, the glamour factor of DVDs has worn off. I think everybody's they've been around long enough that any shows that you liked that were around before DVDs came out, or any movies that you liked that were around before DVDs came out, you've gone out and bought those. So you're caught up. You've built up your collection of your favorites. So what you're looking at now is you're judging what's coming out now, and you're saying, well, I kind of like this, I kind of like that. But, I mean, really, with any given year, how many things do you say, well, I really got to buy that? I mean, like, we're all sitting here right now. I can obviously say that, for me, Inception is like an automatic buy, Toy Story 3. But beyond that, really, there's nothing that I feel compelled that I have to buy. A lot of things are happening with you got, media-less distribution now with things like Netflix, Blockbuster, or whatever video stores you go to. They take the DVDs that they've rented out a couple of times. You wait a month, so you can get them for, like, you know, three for $20 kind of thing. So there's lots of things going on.
And lot more people are doing that than they used to.
Because the glamour of owning that shrink-wrapped copy of a brand-new movie, I think it's kind of died. So I just think it's gone through its life cycle, a lot of people have gotten what they wanted from the format now, and now they're being more choosy.
It's getting to be a bigger bargain just to go the Netflix route, which is I have the system where you pay, $15 a month for three movies at a time, unlimited. That's what I get. I think people are going more and more that route. Who wants to buy a movie? I mean, you can keep it for as long as you want, as long as you're still paying for that. You know,
I agree, Jamie. First off, I think the reason DVD sales have been slowing for some time, first off, it's content. I think that's the most important thing. Obviously, when DVD first came about, everything was being, you know, people were reconverting their collections because also TV shows was a novel thing to have those box sets. So everyone bought in on that. Eventually, I think it's, as I said, everyone just got copies. And what it is, partly I think it is that, one, it's storage. It's not, it becomes real difficult to store. And I believe, and I've said this many times before, is that streaming is the way things are going to go. And, you know, it's been mentioned about Hulu, but I more importantly say about Netflix, InstaView is a fantastic service. Now, for those people that want a physical copy, they don't go to Blockbuster anymore. They don't go to the video stores. They go to Redbox, and they can go and get something very easy and very convenient anywhere, practically. Now, I remember hearing about this on another podcast talking about this, and there's always going to be that contingent of people that, for some reason, will not leave the video store. I don't know why. Now, I mean, it is kind of a shame, because there will never be that time when you can go to the video store and look up really obscure stuff, and that's just, as you know, everything can, you know, converts from one format to another, there's always going to be stuff left to the wayside. It's really, you know, DVDs have just been a commodity like anything else, and, you know, why really, you know, sit with, you know, spend $20 on something when you can just go to Netflix or Redbox, spend a couple of bucks, and, you know, if you really want to buy it, you'll buy it, but most of it's, you know, like myself, what's the point of me having all these DVD cases around? So to me,
you know,
it's just not worth it. I would definitely say it's not an issue of people. Well, because right now they're so cheap. Is it the economy? I would say that would affect more the idea of converting your collection to Blu-ray, which to me, I'm not a, you know, if you have the HD equipment, you really want to go with it, fine. but not everyone's going to just suddenly, you know, drop their collection and convert from DVD to Blu-ray. It's just not worth it as opposed to VHS.
Well, it's been so recent, too. That's the other thing, though. It's not like – and Blu-ray is being pushed on the market. It's not so much – like DVD, it was – everyone knew VHS was going to eventually go under, and everyone thought maybe it would be Laserdisc that would do it. It didn't. Maybe DivX will do it. It didn't. I don't know what else came between them. So then DVD comes to the market, and that was introduced in 97, and it didn't really explode in the market till around 2000. 99, 2000 was when it really took off. Because I remember I worked my ass off and saved money and bought my first DVD player. And DVDs used to be really expensive, and now they're so damn cheap.
It goes back to the idea of the content. And originally you had, you know, and this is, as I said, no one realized that TV shows were going to be such a great gold mine. But as I said, I mean, people are just going to want to do away with the physical, you know, stuff, and you might as well, you're just better off, you know, streaming it or downloading it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a piracy issue. I know those studios like to play that up.
That's smoke and mirrors.
I believe that's nonsense. I think that's only for a select group of people. For me, as pretty much the layman, and I think a lot of other people are like this, they don't know, trying to do a torrent is a pain in the ass.
Sure.
And unless you know how to do IT, you don't know how to do a torrent. And also, the quality isn't going to be that good. You're watching it on a tiny screen. You know, you want to spend all night downloading a two-hour movie when you could just easily, you know, just wait, you know, for it to show up on Netflix. You know, it's really, why even bother? But like I said, I think ultimately it matters to streaming and the content. And I know people like going to the movies, but the movies are being increasingly more expensive. And as I said, with the 3D gimmick, that's certainly jacking up prices even further. And it always also goes back to the standby complaints that people have going to the theater. The people talking. You know, people, you know, little
cell phones.
Cell phones. I mean, and despite how expensive it is, it's gotten to the movies, there are still people who will engage in both the assholish behavior of talking during the movie and cell phones. So, once, you know, that is also affecting, you know, people going to the movies. And as I said, because it's so expensive, you think, well, if I'm going to pay this money and I'm going to still deal with these annoyances, why should I even put up with this? And it is a shame because the theater is a unique experience, and I'd hate for it to disappear. Because I really do think, you know, movies were made for a reason to be shown on the big screen.
I don't think they'll disappear. I think that's the one thing, you know, that won't happen. Obviously, 3D will disappear because, hey, they tried to push it down our throats in the 50s, in the 80s. Didn't work out then. Yeah, the biggest movie of all time is in 3D, but big fucking whoop. That doesn't mean that every other movie – that doesn't mean it's going to stick. And
I think what will happen is that you're going to have more – and this has been occurring more often with this, a lot of indie pictures – is that you'll have a movie appear in the theater, you know, appear on DVD, and appear on video on demand, or usually around the same time.
Simultaneously. That options. Might be. And that will be interesting. And if I had to choose, I would still go for the big screen experience,
because
nothing...
Because will the physical medium of the way a film is carried disappear completely? That's possible. I still think there will always be, a market for to have a physical copy in your hands. Although it's hard to say, you know, because to me it's not even like music where people talk about, well, they like vinyl. There can be an argument made as to why you like vinyl, because there are certain qualities you can't capture in a digital format. But in terms of film, I guess the only reason you want to have a digital copy is that you just don't want to have your hard drive take a massive dump one day and then you're screwed. But
I think physical copies are going to remain. I just think physical stores are going to disappear.
Oh, stores are on their way out.
Amazon's
down.
Let me tell you something.
Did someone just say Amazon's going under?
No.
I was about to say, the hell?
No, I said Amazon's not going anywhere. I said, just from the perspective of an Englishman in America for my 2 weeks of vacation in Florida, I was really excited to go there and be able to, you know, maybe find some DVD stores and pick up some import DVDs on my multi-region player that I can't get over there, and not having to pay shipping costs up the arse and have it, seized by customs and stuff. And I searched far and wide, and I could find nothing, except Best Buy. I finally found Best Buy, one shop, one store that sold DVDs, and I went in there, you know, and I found every single DVD. Not only was it wrapped in the plastic wrap, but each DVD had, like, this huge copper wire on it with an alarm, and I was like, that's so cute. They think I'm a criminal. That's wonderful. And I thought, fuck this, man.
No, go on, then. I was just... Well, I was just about to say, Phil, I mean, also for the independent, you don't have these stores anymore because a lot of the big, you know, big box chains, as they're called,
yeah,
your
Walmart,
your Target, your, obviously Best Buy is the best place, physical place to get a DVD, you know, get a DVD.
Yeah.
Why,
yeah.
you know, bother going to the, you know, to Blockbuster where, and then, you know, and as I said, I mean, the only thing that's going to be a shame when you have the physical store disappearing is that you're not going to have the ability to say, okay, I want to go just, you know, putz around at the store. Maybe I'll look at, you know, I'll look at the box art and I'll pick something up. And I think when you look for something that's on demand or on, I mean, streaming is kind of, when you're on Netflix, Instabee, you can at least browse. I mean, with Netflix, you kind of have to know what you're looking for, and then, you know, maybe they'll recommend you some stuff. But it doesn't obviously have the same effect as just going to a store and browsing and doing all that stuff. But Yeah, the physical store is just not going to be around. And like I said, it's being supplanted by Redbox. I don't know if you have that over in the UK, Phil, but Redbox is a huge thing. Jamie, I know you've probably seen them.
Oh, yeah. Never done it, but yeah.
I haven't done them either. They're basically vending machine-like devices for you rent a DVD for a buck a day. And this is good for your very new releases because this is the problem Netflix has where a lot of stuff will be held on long waits. And it may be a few weeks, even to a couple of months, before you get a DVD.
But that's going to go away. That I mean, that's really
eventually.
Blockbuster. I mean, Blockbuster's got this week out at first thinking, hey, this will save us. No, it hasn't.
Yeah, it's still nonsense.
It's still nonsense. So when Blockbuster goes under next year, which everyone's saying is going to happen, that's going to be gone. And then Netflix will be getting the new releases like they did. I mean, this whole new release thing only happened recently. It was like a month or two ago where they stopped.
30-day delay.
Especially if they're going to streaming. Like, then there's no problem with providing inventory for everybody.
My guess with the streaming is just because I know you're getting it for a very low price. I mean, yeah, the quality ain't all that great, but on some movies. And the movies are, the selection is very odd. I have a feeling eventually they're going to, you know, have a thing where it'll be maybe they'll have multi-tiered service. Because I have a feeling, you know, people are willing to pay more to have the ability for better content. And I think that's really going to come up, and I think that's a really great thing. Hulu's trying to do that, but the problem with Hulu is that it's not, you know, I can get InstaView through my 360, which is a great thing. Hulu, I have to have my computer. And the problem with Hulu Premium, which is their $10 a month service, is that they haven't done away with commercials. To me, I have a feeling people are willing to pay if you do away with the ads. And I know that'd be a personal preference of mine. I don't see why not. As I said, there's always going to be people that are going to want to pirate stuff, but to me, it's just not worth the, you know, the effort and to do that. Like I said, you have to know what you're doing. Most people aren't going to want to spend the time, and to me, it's just not worth it. So, like I said, it's going to be inevitable with streaming, and I highly look forward to it because I'm not a technical snob, so I don't care really what the quality is unless it looks like total garbage. So,
And all this craziness just to see an Ernest movie, you know, for some hick who wants to watch Ernest Saves Africa or something. You know, that's all this is about. You know, the best way to see that movie. That's all it's about.
So right. I suppose this movie's coming through my disk drive any moment. I just clicked here. It ain't coming out yet. That's a horrible impression.
That was pretty funny, though, I must say.
I know, an Englishman's trying to do a hick. I won't bother next time. But I know you love it. But just to give you a perspective, being a Blu-ray guy myself and into it, what I'm noticing is that Blu-ray is catching on, but not really. And it does seem to be in the same place that Laserdisc was when it was, you know, really... really big, yeah. And that's that. It's not really for just people who want to watch a movie and don't care. It really is for film fanatics or film connoisseurs who really care about getting, you know, classic movies with the best picture quality, with the best special features and stuff, because it can contain them, and that's what the format's for.
Well, let me ask
for.
You this, Phil. Isn't it I've heard about this with some movies that have been converted to Blu-ray, and it looks terrible. It just doesn't work. Sometimes
they're too clean.
Maybe the way they process the film in the first place, like... I won't get into the technical details because they were putting me to sleep, but like the movie Aliens is just kind of grainy, and it's always going to be grainy because of the way they put it together, and there's been no way – it's not possible to clean the thing up. There's no way
at
all.
Well, there is, but there's a trade-off. You lose detail in the picture when you do that.
It's correct. It's one of those misconceptions where basically that, if a movie is shot
and it looks like that, then that's the way it looks. Now, what the studios are misunderstanding is that people want to see the movie as it was presented when it was theatrically released. Now, if that means it's got some grain on it, that's fine, because that's par for the course. One of the mistakes that they've made, and this has been highly publicized on Digital Bits, is that they just brought out Predator on Blu-ray. Yep. And there have been some complaints with previous releases that the movie looks too grainy. But the movie always looked grainy, so Fox, mistaking that criticism, and I can't really blame them, actually, they basically gave it a brand new digital transfer, and they eliminated all the grain. And the result is the most absurd picture quality, where all the guys on screen look like plastic. And there are actual screen craps of this, of Arnold Schwarzenegger looking like he's been shined in Vaseline. And it looks painful. Yeah, go on.
It's called digital noise reduction, and like it's a tool, and with any tool, there's a trade-off. I mean, when you're removing the grain from the picture, you're also killing the detail of the picture. So that's why Schwarzenegger starts to look plasticky, because you start to smooth out his skin and take out the weave of his shirts, and
just like
all the small detail is lost because you're basically smoothing out the picture. So this thing with Blu-ray is almost like with this DNR, is almost like when DVDs first came out and people were talking about pan and scan versus widescreen. But unfortunately, I think people who watch HDTV, when you watch a sports event or something, and you know, like HD video is different than cinematic video. When you watch a football game or a soccer game or something like that, and then you get a super clear picture or a documentary, like a nature documentary, I mean, that high-def video is going to be, because it's digital, it's going to be, grain-free. But movies are analog, and when you convert them to digital, if you want them to look the way they looked, you have to leave in that grain. Some movies are worse than others. Predator is probably the prime example right now. I think there's been other issues with other releases, but...
I'm going to tell you a story about one, Lou, if I may. I'm going to tell you a story about a Blu-ray I picked up, the original Clash of the Titans with Harry Hamlin. I picked up the Blu-ray. I'm fond of that movie, kind of. I like it a lot. I haven't seen it in years. I don't know it on DVD. So I picked up the Blu-ray, which they released to coincide with the remake, of course. And I bought it, and I brought it over, and I popped it in the drive, and I watched it. First of all, it is one of those ones where it's not that it's... they've reduced the grain. There's too much grain. It's basically, they haven't gone back to the original negative or anything like that. They've just copied the DVD transfer, which after some research on the internet I found also got a lot of complaints for grain. And secondly, I put in the disc and I couldn't hear anything. The movie had no sound, and I found out that basically some Blu-ray players will not actually play sound for Clash of the Titans. Some will, but if you watch it on your computer, you're fucked. You can't hear it. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm watching a shit picture with no sound. Why don't I go downstairs, take my VHS tape that I taped off the telly, and watch that? Because that's better. What am I paying for here? And that is a huge, huge problem. The fact that Blu-ray is so steeped in the technology that it's full of bugs. It's like they haven't even got a handle on how it works yet. And that's just... that's unforgivable for a major studio release. And the fact is that the main people who buy Blu-rays are people like me and people like you. We're on the internet and we're wise motherfuckers and we listen to what the word is. And when the word gets out that something like Predators or Clash of Titans is shit and it doesn't work and it's not worth your money on Blu-ray, we won't buy it. And that's why sales are down. And that's what they have to realize. Some companies like Criterion, which we all worship, they, for some reason, they've got the magic, and they always manage to get it right for some reason. Mm-hmm. But other companies, major studios, they're not doing it right.
Yeah, well, the problem is that people that get these, you know, like the average Joe that puts out a wad of money to get like a HDTV and a Blu-ray player, you throw in something like Predators, if they don't clean it up and make it look like what they did with this re-release, they're going to complain. It says, I spent all this money. Why am I still seeing grain or all these, you know, to them it looks like dirt on the picture. So that's going to be an uphill battle. And I don't know, like, going forward after, you know, future generations are with the way we're, you know, film stock and whatnot, unless it's a deliberate artistic decision, people are going to be expecting their movies to be grain-free. I can see a lot of these old movies are going to be reconverted to get rid of grain. And you know, maybe somewhere down the line they're going to come up with some tool that will allow them to do that conversion without hammering the fine detail like that we're getting right now with the, like with the plastic Arnolds and whatnot. But yeah, going, you know, down the road, seeing grain in a movie is not something that people are going to accept anymore. That may take like a generation or something.
That's a good question, Lou. But I mean, that's always been talk of digital projection in the theaters, whether they're going to do that. Which is not, I mean, I've seen digitally projected films, and they have looked amazing, but, and, you know, especially for re-releases, but it is painstaking, I have to imagine, to get old films to look good and to be presented in a digital fashion, because obviously they weren't shot that way when they did it.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, you know, there's going to be issues with the way the film looks. I mean, the classic example I heard was, I remember someone talking about the Blu-ray version of RoboCop, because it was so clean, you know, the suit looked really rubbery. So, I mean, that's all. I've always had that issue with, you know, that sometimes you gotta, you know, there's a film is a medium, and there's a certain way film has a look of that you just can't replicate on digital video, and it's always, that's why I'm not always a big fan of seeing things shot on digital, because it's too clean. Mm-hmm. So, and that's always, but that's
Look at the Star Wars prequels. I mean, like the last two Star Wars movies were shot on digital, and they look terrible.
Keep Star Wars out of this, Williams.
No, but it's true, though. I mean, like, then again, you look at something like Zodiac or Superman Returns that were shot on video, and they look great. They look like film. Like, wait, that's not video. It is. Really? You know?
I know. It does. I was thoroughly impressed, especially with Zodiac, that you don't have that look. Now, I first saw digital, you know, video in a movie when I saw Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
And that's very. Yeah, there are a couple of shots. Well, there's a couple of shots where it's clearly video. For the most part, though, to Rodriguez's credit, it looks like film.
It does, except for when there's action going on in the day. For some reason, I could tell.
So. Yeah, the one that comes to mind is Killing the Chef. That was so clearly video. I mean, that tracking shot where he just, like, gets up, like, goes into Terminator mode and just shoots the chef while he's arguing at a staff. Like, that was, like, it's video.
Unfortunately, I think this is something that just over time has... as companies migrate to digital, and it's inevitable. I think it's going to become a non-issue as newer audiences just grow up with it, and that's like we grew up with film. We're used to a certain look with film. I think with the next generation of moviegoers are just going to get used to that look and say, that's the way I like it.
And then the only thing about that look is the fact that just to me, it looks so cheap if they don't do it right. It's like, why am I paying nearly $20 now to go see this in the theater? Or I'll wait for it to show up on streaming. Yeah. There's no reason for me to do it.
Yeah, for you and me, I totally agree. But I fully believe that for the next generation of moviegoers, that it'll be a non-issue. It's just what they've grown up with. They're used to it, and that's the way films have looked and always looked.
Although I will say this, the only thing is that compared to digital versus film is that you're not. See, I mean, I used to be one of those people that thought never understood the difference between pan and scan and letterbox.
Yeah.
Now there's obviously a huge difference because not seeing the full picture, but
there are still people who don't know the difference, sadly,
and they're idiots basically. But film versus digital,
or they might not care. I mean, if they don't care, they just want to watch a movie no matter what.
It's not distracting. I don't know what people are talking about. It's one of those things like when you first see it, it's distracting. You're like, well, if you explain it and they still go, I got them black bars, and they go, yeah, okay, you're an idiot,
but right now, I mean, that's just not paying attention. But I always think that film, because of its quality, to me, it goes back to the whole idea of vinyl. Your film is never going to go away. It's a medium. It's a way to show an artistic expression. I don't think it's ever going to disappear. Much in the same way, you know, there's digital photography, and I think, you know, even there's film photography. It will still exist in some boutique method. Because hell, I kid you not, I even read an article yesterday in the local paper. Although I think this is just for the sake of just being extremely difficult, where there was a small group of people that wanted cassette tapes. Now, I don't know why anyone would want cassette tapes. No reason to ever listen to cassette tapes, because it was a shoddy piece of technology. Like I said, vinyl, for all its problems, presents something that digital cannot. Much of the same way film can present stuff that digital cannot. And I think that film is never going to go away, and it's always going to be there in all of its various forms, whether it be Super 16 or 35 or even your various snuff film 8mm.
Now, there's one final question I wanted to ask you guys, and that's this on the subject of special features. Now, we are noticing, first of all, a very disturbing trend that's happening right now, and that's that special features, if any, are all being saved for the Blu-ray release. If you're still on DVD, but you want to see...
Not all, but most. They'll say
this is clearly a case of where they're trying to ginny up the sales of Blu-ray. Now, I remember even, Andre Della Morte over at Chud talking about special features were a huge novelty when they first came out. Where you had, especially with commentaries, this is a great example, where a lot of the good commentaries come from the earlier days of DVD.
And LaserDisc.
When people didn't know what they were dealing with. Now, what commentary has there been in probably the last 5 years that's been really, really worthwhile? You know? I would assure you, you probably can't think of any.
Unless it's an older movie. That's the problem, though.
Older movie, yes.
All the older
Fairbanks commentary on The Mist is pretty good, but he does good commentaries, period. It's more the individual than the old movie.
And especially with an older movie like a Criterion, I think you could definitely have a case for that. But it was definitely a novelty, and people really wanted to check it out. Nowadays, I barely, if ever, check out a special feature unless there's a real, genuine reason.
The other problem, though, the commentaries is that, you know, you can't talk when – the whole idea is to get the filmmaker's perspective to come clean about the process. You can't come clean about the process, particularly when you're on the studio-sponsored studio's dime for these DVDs / Blu-rays, because you have to say nice things. You can't be 100% honest about the experience. You can't say, well, this executive was a dickhead who almost tried to stop it from happening. You can't say that, even if that's what happened. Oh, so it's a great shoot. Everyone had a blast. No?
Right.
The shoots are pretty fucking bustling.
Well, again, like Ed said way back at the beginning of this question, it comes down to content. I mean, how many Lord of the Rings movies or event movies, everybody has, you know, their own really special movies, deserve commentaries, and people are actually going to be energized enough to even want to listen to those commentaries? I mean, are we going to listen to a commentary for the A-Team or for Despicable Me or, for, you know, but for Inception or Lord of the Rings or...
But the problem
is
no one doesn't do commentaries.
It's become more and more the thing of the better filmmakers out nowadays just say, I'm not doing it. My movie speaks for it. Back then, they wouldn't.
But for the general movie viewer, they're only going to watch... You know, like a handful of, or listen to a handful of commentaries for movies that they really, really, really got invested in. And it's like this convergence of media with, we've seen CD sales have collapsed, and it's, you know, people are all doing it off MP3 files and on media. Book sales are going down rapidly as ebooks start to take off. People are only going to start buying physical media for things that really strike a chord with them, for, you know, those really special, like, this is really speaking to me, I'm going to buy the physical copy of that. For all the other stuff, they're going to go with, streaming or whatever. Physical media is going to become less and less important as time goes on.
Part of the reason, I think, also is that it's like you say, I remember the reason I did get into DVD was for special features. It was actually, I'd read a report about the Ghostbusters DVD, and they were saying how, I mean, it was one of the first DVD films, the catalog releases, that really took advantage of the format and packed it with special features, things that people hadn't seen before, and I was just like, okay, I'm in, I want that. And it didn't disappoint.
And to be fair, that is one of the greatest deleted scenes of all time from Ghostbusters, is the bumps.
Which one? Oh, yeah, that's right.
That might be one of the all-time great deleted scenes of any movie, is the two bombs from Ghostbusters.
Yeah, funny story. That wasn't the one I remembered. The one I remembered, I thought you were going to say, was when Stay Puft's inflatable hat falls onto the street. I got my friends around, and I said, you've got to see this. This is so cheap. It's amazing. And I showed them that, and they said, that's so cheap. It's amazing. And it's great. But Lube also brings up a good point, that there are so few movies these days where I say to myself, I want to know how that was made. I think the last one that I can remember was Benjamin Button. I said to myself, I want to see
Fincher gives very good commentaries. You know, honestly, at this point, considering some people do the commentary route, the guy who hasn't, and I think would get people to listen again, and this is no bullshit, it would be Spielberg. That guy never gives commentaries. He will give interviews for documentaries. He's all for that, but he's like, I'm not going to talk in my movie. And that's the last guy left. He's never done one. And if he ever obliges, then take interest. But, you know, I think the long-standing story was if he was ever going to do it, it would have been for the Indiana Jones movies. But he said, like, eh, let's do the documentary. But that would have been the closest we ever got, and that didn't even happen.
But it's also about that your movie, the making of your movie, has to be interesting itself. Otherwise, the special features can't be interesting. Like Lord of the Rings,
the making
that's
of
an amazing
any,
journey.
The making of any movie is interesting, actually, to be honest. I mean, it's
but
a miracle.
It's like you said, Jamie, the interesting things often can't be told.
No, that's true.
The best commentaries really relate to, you know, if it's a project of done out of love. I think the best, or something where or someone else has such a, you know, really... Personally, one of my favorite commentaries is the Roger Ebert Dark City commentary, which which was amazing. And it's just because it's a new perspective done by someone who is very passionate and who's done the you're learning. And it's almost like going to film school. And it's very fascinating. Most people, it's like we've heard it for the upteenth time of whether the gaffer was a cool guy to hang around with. You know?
Yeah, like
it's. Is making a movie interesting? Yes, for those involved. Most of us don't care whether you know Steve from Craft Services made a meat frittata that day.
Yeah, like to me, it's come
and
down
for
to
the
like
record, he did.
Okay,
but there's like a handful of guys that are good at. Like to me, Frank Darabont. Every commentary he goes, it's like you said, it's like you're going to film school.
Or Del Toro is also.
Or Del Toro, yeah, another one.
Kevin Smith,
John Carpenter. Like with especially when he does one with Kurt Russell, like those ones
the,
are on.
The great example is the Sam Raimi Evil Dead 2 commentary. Another
that is
one.
Probably my favorite commentary of all time. Actually, is Evil Dead 2 because that's where when you hear Sam Raimi later by himself with other people, he's so reserved, but you know he's got this energy to him, and he's just sitting. I mean, it's basically them having a beer. I mean, not literally, but just like enjoying each other's company and giving each other shit. The whole time, you know.
Because he's not like that at all in the Spider-Man commentary.
No, he's so funny. It's like, you mean that wasn't Bruce? You know, talking about the time he had to, like, slap Bruce around. He was crying in front of everybody. I had to take Bruce in the back and slap him around a few times. And
Sam, don't tell that story.
It's like, where is that guy during the Spider-Man? You know, you see a little bit of it in the documentary because how he likes to torture his actors. And, like, he gives Tobey Maguire so much shit and tells the extras, be sure to hit Toby as hard as you can. And apparently they did.
And we learned none of that in the Spider-Man commentary.
No, but you see it in the documentary, but it's so damn funny.
I mean, ultimately, if you're interested in the director, you're going to want to listen to it. And if not, you're not going to care. Because also, sometimes they get the most random people for these commentaries, whether it's the screenwriter or one of the producers. It's just so arbitrary the way they get some of these people. It's like, do I really want to hear this? You know, I think the only other person you want to hear a commentary from is Tarantino. And Tarantino never does commentary on his own work. He'll do it if he's written stuff. And his commentary on True Romance is amazing.
Yeah, he'll do obscure commentary.
That goes from earlier days.
Yeah. I would love to see this guy give a Bastards commentary, but that'll never happen, ever.
Yeah, so really what is left? You've already seen people that you want to see are never going to do it. So what have you got?
Yeah.
You know? So that pretty much means the well's run completely dry.
Exactly.
So you can't have the candor anymore, compounded with the fact that people we'd want to hear from are never going to do it. What do you got left? Nothing.
Yeah. And even like with the sorry. Go ahead.
So I was asking Christina, because I know you made a comment there before that you've noticed that Blu-rays are getting all the special features and DVDs are getting none. Where do you stand actually on special features these days? Do you give a shit about them for the most part?
I care a lot about I look and see how many special features are on the DVD before I get it because I don't want them to double dip on me like they did with Lord of the Rings. I got the first Lord of the Rings, and then I heard like a couple of months down the line that they were going to double dip. And after that, I didn't get any of those first Lord of the Rings ones. I wanted to get the really nice one with all the special features on it. So I'll look and see, does it have a commentary? Does it have documentaries? How much stuff does it have on here? And if it doesn't have a lot, I'll probably pass on it because I'm thinking, yep, a couple months down the line, they're going to release the super-duper silver diamond special edition with all the stuff on it that I want to see.
They don't really do that anymore, though, to their credit.
Incidentally,
to their credit, they don't really double dip anymore because the market has shrunk so badly that they realize, like, if
they're double dipping with the Lord of the Rings movies because they only released the theatrical versions. Yeah, I haven't bought the Blu-rays of Lord of the Rings. I'm waiting for the extended editions to come out before I buy the Blu-rays.
Yeah, but for most movies, they're just not double dipping anymore like they used to.
Incidentally,
it's only for really big projects. I think it's also because of how intensively capital intensive it is. I know they're going to do that for the whole Alien series.
Yeah. But they have an excuse.
Yeah, right.
And the Burke, the Burke cocoon scene, that'll be why Phil buys it. Only reason. Well, I could finally see 20 seconds of Paul Reiser.
Well, I want to see the theatrical or the original version of Alien 3. That's what I'm...
Yeah, you better be kidding, Williams, because you've been waiting for that scene just the way I have, as well as the Eric Stoltz footage from
I'm just going to go on YouTube. Someone's going to post it up there. We're good to go. I've seen it.
Yeah, a week before it comes out. You're so right. And yeah, I'm really going to wait till Christmas to see it. You are completely right about that.
I think this is where definitely the physical copy is going to stay around, because you're not – I mean, that's the one downfall of streaming, is that you don't – I mean, it's not – you don't have everything. You just have the movie. And for people who just want to watch the movie – this is where streaming works great. Like I said, I think this is where the physical copy is not going to disappear, because it's going to offer something that the streaming cannot. So yeah. There are reasons why it's not going to disappear, because there's unless you have a screen that's the size of your wall, you're not going to be able to replicate the theatrical experience. The streaming is not going to be able to replicate the fact of you getting special bonus features. Or wanting to own it for because you enjoy that project so much.
What's amazing to me is the studios still think that they can. Like, they're bringing out 3D TVs now. They think that they can replicate
because they're just
being
bullheaded, and they won't acknowledge the trends of. And this has been talked about by other people, that they will not acknowledge the trends of what's going on. And unfortunately, this will bite them in the ass if they do not respond. This is what happened with the music industry, and it's a real shame that the studios are not responding to this. Now, ultimately, because that's just it fundamentally changes the way things they are, and it's tough to say. I mean, we're not in the position, and I can see why they don't, because it greatly affects the way they do their how they get money, and so they want to hold on as best they can to what they've got, to the previous business model. Now, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it was always like this with the studios. I mean, some have embraced it, but others, fell by the wayside, and we'll see what happens.
I just think it's absolutely fascinating how it feels like we've come full circle in a way to the way things were maybe in the early 90s when we had Laserdiscs, but the only people who were buying Laserdiscs were film fanatics who care about the special features, and they brought out some absolutely fantastic stuff, but it wasn't a mass market thing. Everyone else buys VHS.
I used to deal with Laserdiscs, because my dad actually had a Laserdisc player right at the tail end of Laserdisc. Special features were a rare thing, actually, on Laserdiscs. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were on some things. I remember the double disc Ghostbusters
Criterion
Laserdisc, and it was crammed with special features. A lot. And then the whole idea of director's commentary, I remember this from an old Siskel and Ebert, I think it was for Apocalypse Now, and that was an amazing thing. That was still a rare thing. Most Laserdiscs, I mean, their quality was very good, but they didn't have much in the way of special features because those discs couldn't hold a lot of information. I remember, you had a disc the size of a giant dinner plate, but basically, it would be A and B. That would be it. And it would be in chapters, like a DVD. Right. I mean, it's amazing how much information a DVD can hold compared to a Laserdisc. It's kind of like the old...
What's even worse is, like, certain Laserdiscs have... Now, like special, like Criterion did so many editions of movies that they don't own the DVD copyright to anymore. So early DVDs, like there was the RoboCop Criterion. They still own Brazil, thank God. A lot of other stuff. Like there's a Criterion Laserdisc for Taxi Driver with a commentary by Martin Scorsese and what's his name, Paul Schrader, I believe his name. What?
I thought you were gonna say what's his name, De Niro.
Yeah. No, you'd have one guy rambling, and then you have the other guy going, yeah, I like that today.
No,
no, but like,
well,
you can't find
his
that.
Eyes. He can't see what he's doing, so.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's – you can't find that anywhere. I mean, you have to have a Laserdisc player.
And that's the thing. With every change in format, there's always going to be stuff left behind. There was stuff left behind that wasn't put on DVD, Blu-ray. They're not going to replicate everything on Blu-ray. And, I mean, streaming may recapture that stuff on DVD. But we, you know, there's always stuff that's going to be lost, especially the way, because no one knew how the formats were going to go. That's why you're not going to get certain TV shows on DVD. It's why you're never going to have certain music cues in DVD. A great example, and this is why I never bought it, was the Married with Children box sets. They don't, the later seasons don't have Love and Marriage. If you go to Hulu.
That's weird, but I heard,
they just have a temp track, and it's a shame. It's why there's a great, you know, it's not even a very good show. That show Cold Case, where every episode is related to music in some way, they're never going to release that on DVD because there's no way in hell they're ever going to get the music right. Same thing with The Wonder Years.
WKRP.
WKRP is another great example because apparently, and I never watched it because I wasn't alive at the time, but they had these great music cues, and you can't get them because who the hell knew that they were going to recapture this in some way?
Is there anything else, just to wrap up, is there anything else that hasn't been on DVD you guys looking forward to, we would love to see, that hasn't hit the home video market anywhere? Has everything pretty much been converted to the digital medium?
No, there's always stuff out there. It's just tough.
Yeah.
It's more movies
than TV shows, I would think.
I'd love to see like those short films, and Phil knows what I'm talking about here, those short films, they just play on USA Network. I sent Phil a couple of links to it, and Phil got, you know, I told Phil it was pretty creepy, and he actually thought they were pretty genuinely scary about the mannequins. You know what I'm talking about, Phil?
But actually, to let you know, I think what would, if they got a hold of those and they re-released them, but they did some kind of digital, you know, reduction, noise, trickery, whatever Lou was talking about in that techno gravel, and could clean them up, would they be as scary in, like, crystal clear picture?
I don't know.
The fact that they're so grainy and, like, low budget and the way that you show me them, like, taped from the television, and that's what part of makes them creepy, I don't know. Something to think about.
I think grain definitely adds atmosphere to a picture, right? And that's why some directors use it intentionally, for that exact reason.
I'm going to be writing an article about this, but if there was a way to actually put Siskel and Ebert on DVD, I would just lose my
friggin'
mind.
Those early shows, fuck.
Everything, but it would be impossible to get the rights to all those movie clips. It would just be. But I'm writing an article on it anyway, so stay tuned for that, folks.
Nice.
So that's it. Wow, this was fantastic. I really enjoyed this.
The epic birthday bonanza.
There you go, folks. People on the comments section, please give us your thoughts on this about, you know, do you give a shit? Do you buy Blu-ray? Are you going to buy Blu-ray? Why not? Do you give a shit about special features? Are we going to have practical stores anymore? Is everything going to be online, just online stores?
And if someone tries to bring back DivX, you're asking for a beating. I just want to make that clear. So. You're just being a pain in the ass. So.
Yeah.
Well, you are inviting the smart asses to do that, Ed, but let's wait and see who it is.
I dare them to try to figure out how did DivX even work, because no one knew how that thing worked.
No, I don't know. I remember Magnavox. There's a thing on YouTube of Leonard Nimoy showing us the future of home entertainment. It was called Gourmet Video.
You showed me that.
It was just like discs, and they went in this gigantic machine, and it's hilarious because he says, with this fantastic service, no smudge or anything. And someone left on the comment, the only smudge is your hands. As you're touching it, you idiot, which it's very funny. Maybe I'll...
They gave the Vulcan nerve pinch and it was over.
Exactly. So, leave us comments about that. Finally, shout out to our movie moan commenters. We only got two comments this week, folks. Maybe you're all on vacation. If so, that's cool. But to A to the H and to Lighthouse, thanks very much for commenting. Please leave us comments, folks. I need to know that you love us. Okay, they don't care, but I need to know. And also, you know, tell us what you thought of Christina. We'll just tell her nice things, and you know, but still, you know, please tell us what you thought of Christina. Christina, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome. Happy birthday, honey.
Thank you. Did you have fun?
I did. I had a lot of fun.
There we go. Fantastic results. Jamie, let's wrap it up.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. You have a great week. We'll see you here, same bat time, same bat channel, at the movies. Take it easy. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Later.